15 after 10 now on 1233 ABC Newcastle. Have you ever used an architect? You know, I'm one of those people who goes, architect? Schmarchitect. I can't afford an architect. I'm sure I can do it myself. Ha ha ha. How many people do that? And for the architects who are listening into 1233, here's a thought. How many people ask you at a barbecue, at a dinner party, look, I hate to talk shop, but I wonder if you could give me a few tips on A, B, and C. One local woman who is an architect had exactly that experience, and through that, she decided she was going to build a website to answer some of those questions so she didn't have to be keep repeating the same thing time and time again. It's called the Home Design Directory, and it's got stuff in there about architecture and also about making improvements to your home so that you're not doing that classic overcapitalization and that you are making the most of what you've actually got. Her name is Angela Ellis. She's in the studio with me now. Angela, welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Well, look, I'm good, and I am one of those people who always thought I can't afford an architect, so I'll just do it myself. Do most people have that perception?
Look, they do, and quite often what they end up doing is doing a quick flash thing to think that's going to fix the problem, but
yeah.
They've got to think about the overall encompassing long scope of things and get that in place, and that's what's important to start with.
Well, when I finally did engage a friend architect, she just had a view on it that reminded me that you pay architects because they speak a language that most punters don't understand at all.
Mm. No, that's right. You've got to remember that, you know, when you're given when you're looking at a small problem, you just see it as that. But an architect or a building designer, as well qualified, will come along and say, look, you know, yes, you've got this small problem, but really the overall problem is this, and this is where you need to start from and then filter down and fix those problems. If you try and fix one problem at a time, you end up with a hodgepodge kind of job, all these bits and pieces mashed together, and you can see it in the end result.
Can you spot a house that has been had an architect run a brush over it on the outside or the inside, and one that's been a real DIY job?
Yeah. You'll find that people that have architecture degrees, whether it's an architect or a building designer, and I make that differentiation because they both have the same qualifications.
Ah, okay. Building designer and architect. Two different.
Yes. Look, I could go into a long diatribe of the differences, but the end result is that if the person that you've engaged has an architecture degree, they're qualified to design a house. And when you look at a house, you can see generally that things are in proportion and, you know, the colours are right and it fits on the site really well. If you get someone that's not qualified or someone that's done a DIY job, you'll get to the property and it looks like there's a door here, there's a window there, it doesn't correspond with anything else, nothing's centred. You can just see there's not a real lot of design finesse.
And is there actual monetary value? For those who aren't all that obsessed or worried about design in their house, although they'll spend a lot of money on the design of their fabulous computer, but that's another thing. For people who don't think design really matters, is there a bottom line value to architects being there as part of the overall?
Look, it will vary depending on the confidence of the designer, their qualifications, and also the kind of work they've done in the past. You know, if they've got a really good name, they're going to charge top dollars. That's just the way it is. But if you'll get some altruistic people that happen to have an architecture degree and want to do the right thing and want to help people. And sometimes I'll say, look, you know, I'll do the job for, you know, I'll get your plans into council and all the design drawings for maybe, you know, $3,000 or $4,000, you know. And that's incredibly cheap. But then you'll get the top end that will say, you know, I'm a qualified architect, you know, I'm registered with the board, I've done jobs overseas and I've been in magazines and newspapers, and they'll end up charging you like $50,000 to $60,000.
Oh, easy. Without actually doing anything, just doing the drawings?
Well, doing the drawings, getting into council, you know, yeah, no, it can be up there.
It's
yeah.
Big bucks.
So actually the best way to pick a professional is ask for the qualifications and ask for to look at some of their work and maybe some references, best way.
Yeah, I think that applies to any professional
Absolutely.
That you engage.
Mm.
Well, maybe you can't do that with a dentist. You know, give me the phone number of somebody's teeth you've done. Or
maybe
some photos. So that's your thoughts on interior, well, certainly from a building design and architecture. I'm intrigued by the fact that you decided that you were going to build this website because you got so many people doing the kind of thing that I do at the barbecue. Hey, Angela, I've got this problem with my house.
Look, the internet is such a wonderful tool. Years ago, like I'm 44 now, so I know that like years ago we didn't have it. And like, not, my God, now we have this wonderful resource of the internet. You can go on and find anything. You take it with a grain of salt, but you can go on and find anything. So about 6 years ago, my husband, who's also an IT guy and my business partner, he said to me, like, how about I build you a website? And I went, oh, no, I don't need a website. No, I don't need it. But he ended up doing it anyway. And I said, you know what would be really handy is a construction cost calculator, because everyone always asks me, how much is my renovations going to cost? How much is it going to cost to build a new home? So we created this website called Home Design Directory. And now, just to our one page about construction cost calculating, we get like 28,000 visitors per month just for that one page.
28,000 visitors a month.
It's phenomenal.
To look at the cost calculator. Mm.
There's nothing in between someone having a guesstimate and saying, you know, oh, how much are these plans, to actually getting a full quote. And this fills that little gap. It's not perfect. It's a guesstimator, but
yeah,
it helps.
But often that's exactly what we want. You know, is it roughly 4,000 or is it roughly 40,000?
Anyone renovating or building a new home, if they've got a figure in their head of like, oh, I've got a $50,000 budget, or that's what I want to spend, usually double that amount and that you're more on ballpark, seriously.
That's scary.
It is, but people, quite often, they get a full quote, plans done, everything, council approval, and then they get it priced, and it's like, shit, I can't afford to do this.
Mm. Because we underestimate what it really costs.
Yeah, everyone does. Because you see, people only build like maybe two or three times in their lifetime.
If that.
Yeah. So, and the price has changed so considerably in between that. Like steel, for example, has gone up like 200 to 300% in the last 5 years. So if someone built back with steel years ago and is building now, the costs have totally blown out.
Fascinating. The website, I mean, I'm going to give you it because I think that's just a really practical thing. It's called homedesigndirectory.com.au. Mm. And Angela Ellis has pulled it together, and it's a really good place to start to just get some basic information if you're dipping your toe into the world of spending some money on your property, if you are indeed lucky enough to have a property. And let's face it, that's a luxury that Australians increasingly may not be able to afford. Angela, let's look at some of the little things that we might think about if we have got the luck of having a property that we've, and the luck of having a few dollars to spend on it. Mm-hmm. Let's look at those things that we often, you know, think, or all the classic books say, if you're going to spend some money, do the bathroom, do the kitchen first, because that's where you'll get the most, the highest return on your dollar. Is that true?
Look, those are the basic things you should start with. And actually, that's what I had written down to talk about today, is that, you know, always have a minimum of 3 bedrooms. You never want to go smaller than that, because you need to be able to resell to a few different kind of families, and that covers your bases. Never just have one bathroom. Like, you might have two pokey bathrooms and you think, oh, look, I'll just make one big one. No, no, no. Keep your two pokey bathrooms, because people want separate spaces even if they're tiny.
Good tip.
Yeah, so those are the ones that, you know, a normal real estate person will probably say.
Yeah.
I would also probably throw in there, try and make your rooms multifunctional. I always think of the drying room. Like, there's never enough space for drying when it's pouring down with rain like it has been recently. Well, not today. But, you know, to have an extra drying room off your laundry that can be shut away, but it can also be used as a spare bedroom.
Okay,
Fantastic.
And adds value.
It does add value, because if someone sees a space that, you know, like I actually designed once, it was a bedroom. It had a louvered cupboard all the way across, but when you opened that, it was a full laundry. So that you can actually have it as a drying room or close it, look like a bedroom. So, yeah, it mightn't be so great when people have got it open, but when it's closed, it just looks like a cupboard full of clothes.
Interesting. Angela Ellis is my guest on 1233. She's a Central Coast architect with a lot of skills in building design and interior design. It is 25 after 10 now on 1233. Let's continue down this. If you've got any money, where would you spend it to get most kind of satisfaction? Because it's not just about the dollar return value on your investment. One of the things that's increasingly I see happening is granny flats, you know, converting the back garage, adding something on top of the garage. But I don't know, I guess, can you put a figure on what these might cost and whether it's worth it?
Well, you know, the fantastic thing is recently the state government has put out some new development control and state environmental planning on granny flats. So they're making it a lot easier for people to be able to do an affordable granny flat in the backyard. Because previously to that, you would actually have to submit a dual occupancy development, and you'd have to pay contribution fees and all these kind of things attached to that. So the state government has now put into place a new state environmental plan that will allow your regular families to put a granny flat in the backyard for mum, and to make it a lot more cost effective.
Okay, and I mean, is it possible to say what they might cost, or is it anything from 20 to 200?
Go to the construction cost calculator.
The construction cost calculator, and you'll find it at this website. Okay.
Look, it's fantastic that, you know, people say this all the time. How much is it going to cost? Look, for a granny flat, I would say that if you're working with cheap materials, you know, trying to make it cost effective, you know, it's a single story, like little you know, unit out the back, I would say, you know, Humper Inn maybe about $900 a square metre.
Okay, $900 a square metre. Get your metres out, folks, if you're listening in, and this could be you. I mean, someone's texted in suggesting that if you've only got the two-bedroom property, could the granny flat sort of count as the third room?
Look, it's such a big selling point if you have that extra space to sell, because it gives people more of an opportunity thinking, oh, this will be great for my mother-in-law, or it's only two bedroom, but what we do when the visitors come, oh my god, they can be out the back, and you've got that acoustic separation, which is just fantastic for any family.
Another thing that comes to mind is that there is an increasing trend, well, certainly in CBD areas, of people living in multiple occupancies, you know, blocks of units, townhouses, which by definition kind of mean there's not a lot you can do with them. Is that the case?
Yeah, look.
Compared to a freestanding house?
Yeah, look, there are differences. And I believe the HIA is having a talk on that, the home show, coming up soon. But yeah, the reality is when you're dealing with units, there are different things you have to abide by, because you've got neighbours, and acoustics and construction and structural issues are a huge point. Pretty much anything that goes on the inside of your unit that is not structural, you can do anything with. If it comes down to structural things, you really need to get approval from council and definitely have it certified by an engineer.
One of the things that townhouses, blocks of units and houses all have in common is that they've usually got at least a bit of grass around the perimeter. In your experience, does it really make any difference in selling properties as to how that looks?
Look, it makes a huge difference, you know, and if you have an option between buying an upper floor to a lower floor that's got a garden, I think the ones on the bottom, you've definitely got better resale going on there. And they usually do charge a little bit more because, you know, an older couple can live there, a family can live there. But the street presence of any dwelling, whether it is a unit or a house, it needs to be the first thing that impresses anyone that's buying or all the people that are living there. And to have a good street presence definitely get you better resale value.
Is it possible to say that there's the number one thing that an architect would always make sure happened, that could be done fairly, would be a fundamental flaw if you were trying to sell a property?
Oh, absolutely.
What's that?
Yeah, look, it's getting back to that street appeal. Honestly, when you come up to a house and just say it's on, I see this all the time, those old pole houses, you know, the long poles, the house up the top, they're on a steep block, usually down the bottom going up. All you see is the floor.
It's underneath.
Ridiculous. So on those kind of properties, if I was to design something, you'd think, okay, When you come to the property, what's the first thing you see? You see the steepness. You know, yes, you probably want to be on the same living space, but you really need to address how it's going to look from the entry of the property.
So doll it up, put some plants, cover it up.
Well, don't have all those poles. And, you know, try and do a little bit more stepping up the landscape so that you've got that opportunity to cut off that view to the underside of your house. Or maybe have some kind of a screening, whether it's plants or whether it's battening or some kind of screening, or do it delicately, but that's the big thing that needs to be addressed.
Okay, well, that's spoken by a woman who lives on the Central Coast who sees a lot of this, a lot of houses.
Critical.
Hey, yeah, I get, just before we head to the headlines, one of the things I notice with renovation is that we're really like sheep. If I see another house that is in the shape of a cube that is in that dull matte mushroom brown colour with the same kind of, I think the teak timber fencing, that's very in.
Oh, yes.
People go on the same pattern.
They do.
We're like sheep.
Yeah, look.
Sorry. Hello, do you have one of those houses? It's a block and it's in that mushroomy colour with a bit of a green, an olive green contrast.
Oh, yes, the timber battens.
Yeah, the timber battens, they're very in.
Actually, I was driving up here in the car from Hardy's Vegas today and I'm thinking, what do people do? You know, they do look at other people's houses. They do look what other people are doing.
But then we all go and buy the same kitchen bench top.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, no, you do. You can't help it because you want to feel like you're in with everyone else and you're keeping up with the giant. It's sad, but we do it.
But it might be. Is it just fashion? Well, to Dan Cox's point,
fashion.
Which
totally.
Might be okay if it's just a pair of jeans, but if it's a $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000 or $200,000 or $300,000 investment and I've got the same house on one end of the street as the person up the other end of the street, I feel like an idiot. Dan
I've
Cox
seen
wants
states
to.
States like that.
Huh?
I have a friend who lives in the state on the Central Coast, and the house, they all have the same letterboxes, and you could choose between three different styles of house within that cul-de-sac. And it was pre-built, and you went in and decided you wanted that part of the property of the land on that cul-de-sac. Mm. And every time I go, I have a joke with them because I say, I keep going to knock on someone else's door because they look the same. Mm.
It's true.
Why do we do that when we're spending large sums of money? And we could just step out of the box and do something, you know, buy the colour that suits you, which is what the fashion stylists say. Mm. Don't wear black all the time.
You know what I think it is that the architecture part of the world in relation to the government, they're trying to keep up with architectural style. Like everyone generally knows that mass housing market is not as good a quality as individually architecturally designed stuff.
Yeah.
So the government is trying to keep up. So they make developers comply with particular codes. Like, okay, this is, we want a better type of housing. So this is what we're going to say that, you know, we require in this development. It's got to have this and it's got to have that. And they've got to go through their, you know, little check boxes of what it's got to have. And keep in mind, mass housing, is actually about 10 to 15 years behind current architectural top-of-the-line stuff.
Mm.
So, like the timber battens, I remember talking about timber batten when I was at uni. Like, that was such a long time ago. So it's got that rollout. So the mass market, it's always takes a little longer for things to come on.
I suppose it's also mass economics in the sense that if you've got four styles of homes that this developer's doing, he doesn't then have to have 20 different architectural plans and ideas.
Yeah.
And the builder knows how to build that one so well by the time he gets to the 30th version of it.
That's right.
He's quick and it's cheap.
Yeah.
And it's mass.
No, that's right. The mass market, they can buy stuff, you know, in mass, so it's cheap. They can buy, you know, 1,000 baths at, you know, $20 each instead of 200. It all comes down to mass economics.
And they don't have different architectural plans every time.
That's right. If you're doing the same plan all the time, it is more cost effective. And look, there are some project home builders out there that have some lovely stuff. But as a general rule, the mass market isn't as up as it should be.
Which is a shame because it sort of looks funny, especially you go to suburbs like Merriweather. My good friend's in Merriweather. There's just a lot of houses that are being built that look very similar. There's a lot of that grey mushroom and white colour. There's a lot of the timber battens. There's a lot of stainless steel balconies. And
is the mushroom cement render going anywhere soon? It's not. It's been
cement,
around for...
Cement render is actually out.
It is gone, is
it's
it?
It's gone in the architectural, like... top of the line houses.
It's gone.
It's pretty much gone.
What's bad? What's in its place? Brick.
Oh, what's in its place? You know, I was thinking about, you know, you got bricks, you've got your high density fibre cement products. So some of the beautiful bricks they've got out these days are gorgeous. Like, I'm not talking about the old brick pseudo federation homes.
Blonde brick.
Yeah, not that at all. What we're looking at now is silicon injected bricks, which are just beautiful. Like, they do have the mushrooms as well, but they've got the chocolates and some beautiful stuff. And it, you know, it's all in the kind of raking they put between the joints, whether it's, you know, flush rake or, you know, so there's lots of different ways of doing brick. And if you have a composite facade house, which has brickwork as well as maybe some fibre cement that has like vertical shadow lines between the actual sheets, or you've got maybe timber battening, which is, you know, you can have battens, timber battens running vertically that are at different sizes and different spacings on the fibre cement. It can look fantastic. go around to some quite wealthy neighbourhoods and have a look at the ultra stuff they're doing.
Oh, okay.
Not your house, you know, down the road.
Pinch the posh ideas.
Pinch the
and
posh.
Do a little bit of it in your neck of the woods. Angela, we could carry on and chat with Dan here all morning. We could. But we are being a little indulgent.
Sure.
Really, I'm sure we are. It's been a delight to have you with
Thank
us.
You for having
Maybe
me.
You can pop back in on another time and we
Lovely.
Literally will have
sure.
some cake and tea and talk homes. Angela Ellis, my guest on 1233 ABC Newcastle this morning. I'm going to tell you that website where you can do your own little cost calculator and stop bugging Angela at barbecues for what would it cost if. It's www.homedesigndirectory.com.au.